Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout, hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll tell you one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Mm-hmm. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember your faith. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. And don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
We're going to have a great show tonight. You know, all over the country, school districts and school boards and PTAs and all kinds of meetings are going on in little school districts and big school districts all over the country. And the debate is here. You know, 6 months ago, approximately, we interviewed Orlene Coley on the Underground Hard Drive on Conservatives Coast to Coast. And that was the first week that I found out about Common Core. And in the meantime, C-Scope in Texas, Common Core's little cousin, that was fully developed. We know a lot of stuff that is going to be in Common Core because we saw C-Scope in its completion down in Texas. It wasn't very long after I found out about Common Core, just about 3 months, that C-Scope fell. The people in Texas said no. The Common Core creators knew that was going to happen. That's why they invented C-Scope in the first place, because they knew they'd never get Common Core past the people of Texas. They knew that. So they kind of runaround. But in the runaround, they gave us a great example of what Common Core is going to look like when it's patched. And there's been a lot of debate. I've watched over the last few weeks, especially as the debate comes and hits my own local community. Our school district is discussing it right now. The parents are gathering together, not happy, obviously, about Common Core. And as I watch the debate, I see one piece of the debate is where all the marbles lie. And we've discussed this on Facebook. We discussed this last week. About a post on Facebook from a conservative that believes that Common Core basically is okay. It's just there's got some things attached to it, like data mining and some other things that are bad that we need to get rid of. But the basic foundation of Common Core is okay. And the reason that is given, and this person goes back over and over and over and over and over to this reason, is that in the state of Ohio, where it's a state, the local schools make a lot of their decisions about the curriculum. It's not changed them much. They're able to add to their curriculum if they want. They've got all kinds of different sources they can grab from. Because Common Core is going to infiltrate into their state that way. In a state that's more like California, where the state has a whole lot more control over the curriculum, or in Texas, where the state has a whole lot more over the curriculum, Common Core is going to be less, because whatever the state decides, that is what the school district's going to get. And the connotation that is given in this argument is that the minimum standards that Common Core is going to pass out is going to be there, and that you can add to then the rest of what you do. You don't need to come adding. You know, it's a case of watch my right hand so you're not paying attention to my left hand. You see, because the curriculum that we're talking, that we're worried about getting in there, and we've got some great examples today, that stuff is going to be thrown in, not in all the curriculum that you choose. That curriculum is going to be thrown in the parts you can't choose. Those little minimum standards. And boy, do we have some doozies today. You know, you got a textbook that they're using in the high school, and it's been totally found to be Common Core, exactly what Common Core people want. It's designed that way. Being used not only where the news source first came from, but it's being used all over the country. One of a number of things that it is, it turns around the Second Amendment meaning. That a state can have a militia, and that militia can be armed. But the people don't have a right to be armed. That's the connotation left in the textbook. And there's a number of other incidents in the textbook where the creator's philosophy of Common Core starts to come out. And, you know, Rodney, you're out here in California with me, and we've got Jennifer. We're going to unmute her in a minute. It's going to be the three of us. We've got Dan Wilson this evening. Is busy with family things going on. He'll be back with us next week. But, Rodney, we've got these two things. We've got that one, and we'll get to the Goldilocks and the three criminals here in a moment, or Goldilocks is a deranged criminal in a moment. But, Rodney, man, you know, we just when we think we have seen it all, they lay another one on the table. And I believe we've got enough snowballs for Common Core and totally wipe it out, make it a laughing stock. We've got extra example of pieces of curriculum. But I'm going to pass it to you. What do you think about this curriculum? Is that not insane or what?
Well, you know, the rewriting of the Second Amendment, I mean, that even shocked me. You know, I mean, we know they're trying to eradicate the history of America, but rewriting the Constitution. And the fact that today is the 226th anniversary of the signing of the U.S. Constitution makes it that much more shocking. You know, and these textbooks aren't even supposed to be out yet. I was actually at a political event tonight in my county, local election for CSD, helping a candidate. And my friend from the school board was there that I helped get elected 2 years ago. And he says, you know, I told him about it, and he goes, I don't even know how this is out, because technically only math and science have been released, not history, but that's already gotten out. He goes, and There's two different versions of the book, and 44 states have adopted it. You know, and with everything going on, I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. You know, two words, private school, you know. It's scary, you know. It's and I think he made a great point. The only way we can fight Common Core right now, unless we all rise up, you got to remember this is a national and federal implementation for the schools. Unless you flip national, unless we keep Congress, unless we take control of the Senate, and unless we get a conservative president, and the conservatives need to quit splitting hairs. We had a very long discussion tonight about Republicans beating up Republicans, Tea Party who hate the Republicans, conservatives who hate the Republicans. Mm-hmm. We all got to come together. Well, if we don't, we're going to lose. And with that in mind, until we flip the national, you better start working on local elections, because that's the only way we can do it. And God forbid, if you're a parent, you better be spending time with your children, and you better be making sure you teach them your values and views, because they're not getting it at school.
Exactly. And you know, Rodney, I'm going to say this real quick, and then I'll pass it down to Jennifer. You know, one of the things you and I both have a firm belief in, because we've discussed this subject many times, at different times, Ronald Reagan knew what he was doing politically. Whether you agreed with him on a political scale of the issues or not, it's a total undeniable fact that Ronald Reagan really was brilliant. And one of the things, one of the most important things that he did was help bring the Republican Party back together. And he always had his 11th commandment. Don't beat up on each other. I'm a firm believer that one of the reasons why we do is because we let the left keep us out on discussions of the stuff at the fringe instead of discussing the basic principles and foundations that those discussions rely on.
Here's a scary thought for you, okay? There was just a release put out for the Democrat Party because Nancy Pelosi wants Reid keep Senate and Nancy wants control of Congress again. She has dedicated herself in California. Jeff Denham and Valdeo are her named number one and number two targets in the country to try and take out, right? But they're supporting Rubio's immigration reform. And I get an email tonight from a group against immigration reform that are demanding to find a Republican to run against those two guys in the Republican primary because they're standing up for immigration reform. It's like, you guys have got to be kidding me. We're going to have our own Republican Party try and take out our own Republican people, ruin the chances of them getting past the primary, have them get a fight that they're unprepared to go up against a Democrat backed by the entire Democrat machine of Obama and Pelosi to try and take them out post-primary. And I'm just sitting there going, are you guys stupid? One issue, one single issue, and you're willing to lose everything we have because if Pelosi gets Congress back, I guarantee you immigration reform will be the least of your worries. This is my problem with people wanting to fight each other over single issue garbage. And it's starting to piss me off because I'm running around with the chairman of the Republican Party, Jim Brulte. We're out here trying to work on local elections. I keep talking to people about getting back to local, getting back to your local clubs. And they want to take one single issue. The guy is 99% right, but on that one issue, let's take him out. We're going to lose Congress with that kind of stupidity. Because if you're on the outside looking in, trying to fight the power, you're part of the problem.
Exactly, Rodney. And, you know, Jennifer dropped. So it's you and me until I see her come back up on the board. But it is. It's key. And it, you know, that's why we got to go back to those basic principles. There's so many issues out there, and I don't always agree with every candidate on every issue. But I know this. When it's primary time, get your fights out. But when it comes time for that big campaign to come, we've got a lousy job of coming together. And it's because during those primary fights, instead of having good debate and duking out a good debate, what do? We throw mud at each other. We act like they're the opponent. When what we should be doing during our primary times is we should be sorting out the issues. Our candidates should be practicing on standing up for their issue. That's what it should be for. I know, Rodney, I know you saw it. I saw it. One of the things in the last presidential primary campaign that was disgusting to me was everybody else's candidate wasn't conservative except for the candidate that they supported. And that was insane. I had my reasons for not liking Mitt Romney. He was always pretty much towards the end of my list by a long shot. I liked Newt Gingrich, but I had things that I didn't care about with Newt Gingrich. There were things that I liked about Rick Santorum. There were some things that didn't completely make me happy with him. But I was ready when we got done and got ready for that regular election to be able to sit down and support the person that we needed to get behind so that we could win against the other side. And we got to get our Christian principle. We got to put it back into our politics, and we got to start treating each other right.
Remember my vice chair race. I wasn't moderate enough for my opponent's group, but I had my own conservatives attacking because I wasn't conservative enough, and I'm going, huh. after 22 years working with the party, and so it's like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's an insane argument, and I feel firmly on certain issues. I feel firmly on abortion. However, I know that when the other side goes and takes the abortion issue to discuss it, they're going to keep the discussion as much as they can on the subject of rape. They won't let you talk about abortion. And so, there's certain candidates for certain offices. I don't care how they feel about abortion. Because they're not going to touch that anyhow. I know that in order to eliminate abortion, and I think it's abhorrent. I think it's an abhorrent practice. But I do know that the only way that we're going to do that is to do that on the local level. The churches have got to get stronger. We've got to get the message out to the people because they don't see the full color feed pictures of a fetus. But we got Jennifer Montrose down in Alabama back, so I want to bring her in. Jennifer, I'm not quite sure how much of the last bit of the conversation you got, but it's an insanity, wouldn't you say? We're looking at all kinds of stuff here. It's just common sense, from bad curriculum to bad behavior on the behalf of us conservatives.
Did she drop
me again?
Okay.
No, she's there on the board.
Well, I was going to make a comment following up on you, Scott, that, the prime example with, the abortion issue and stuff is that agreeing with the person 99% and you're going to try and destroy them within your own party for 1% and lose the election overall. Was Romney perfect? No. All these people, and I've had Liberty Caucus, Ron Paul people, true conservatives, libertarians, Romney this, Romney that, Romney that. I got news for you. Obama this, Obama that. Romney would not be taking us into Syria right now. Romney would not be trying to rewrite our Constitution. Romney would not be out there golfing every day, blowing our entire fortune, nor would he be electing absolutely incompetent people to the Fed. He'd be trying to abolish the Fed right now, and that'd be his fight. Is he perfect? No. Is he better than Obama? Yes.
Definitely. And, Rodney, we have got Jennifer with us now. We've got her back. And we've got Dan Wilson tonight, who we're not expecting to call in this evening. He's got a busy week going on at home. But good to have Dan with us. So we'll go next to Jennifer. And then, Jennifer, I'll just let you pass it to Dan. Well, we still got Jennifer on the studio. Dan, do we have you there?
I think so. I apologize. We had a death in the family, and It's been, you know, been crazy over here. I haven't even figured out the topic yet. What were we talking about?
Well, you know, we started out talking about some of the bad curriculum that just popped up in the last couple of days. But mainly, Rodney and I have been, kind of moved the discussion over a little bit to politics within the GOP, within the conservatives, within the libertarians. I lumped them all together because if we all got together in unison when the important times came, we could accomplish a lot. But we get stuck on these side issues, and then we beat each other up, and then we, you know, we get into these primary fights, and we do get out. And, you know, I'm a firm believer, Dan, in standing up for your convictions. But I also know sometimes you've got to argue the right issues. You've got to argue the right things. You've got to make the right message. And sometimes that's not on some of these other issues, or, as Rodney states so eloquently, a one-issue person, a person that, boy, that issue knocks that person entirely out. I cannot stand that person because they agree with me on 99% of it, but this one thing they don't. And that's kind of a mentality, and it hinders our growth. We can win. I'm a firm believer that this country has basic conservative beliefs, and I believe it's overwhelming. I believe it's over 60%. I believe it's like 75%. That really, when it all comes down to it, if you just reduce down to the basics, they'd agree with us. But we end up fighting, Dan.
Republicans are notorious for shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, what they do is they get off on these, as you said, side issues, and then they start arguing on these side issues, and they forget what their, you know, the end goal is. And Republicans and libertarians both are very, very good at that. Where the Democrats are brilliant at steering to where they want you to argue. I mean, if I can say the two bad things about the Republican Party, first of all, we are so easily manipulated. And second, then we just go off on these stupid tangents. If you want a Republican to be, to get off an important issue, mention abortion or mention gay rights. And they're gone. And the thing is, what we need to do is stick to our core and what are we trying to do. You know, and the things, at least in my opinion, is we have to teach the world that the facade that the Democrats have created for us is not true. We have to show them that we're the ones, that we're the party that are for the people. We're the ones that have stuck up for the minorities. We're the ones that are of the middle class. And we aren't that, you know, just because we're pro-free enterprise, that means we aren't in bed with the big oil companies. Why don't we tell the truth? You know, the Democrats are in bed with Wall Street. They're in bed with all these green companies that are shafting us all. They're in bed with the battery companies that are polluting the crap out of everything. You know, and we take the blame for it all. You know, as soon as something, you know, the housing bubble. I remember Barney Frank on George Bush was saying, the housing bubble's going to blow. We're going to be in a mess. We have way too much subprime, too many subprime loans out there, and we need to deal with them now. He said that in four separate speeches. Each time Barney Frank goes, don't worry about it. soon as the housing bubble blew, Barney Frank was the first one screaming bloody murder and blaming us. And sure enough, the press jumped on it, and everybody else did. And then all Obama had to do is said it's Bush's fault. He's been saying that for 5.5 years. And what we need to do is keep on spreading the truth. I don't understand why, you know, as you said in the last election, Romney had the golden bullet, and he didn't shoot it. I don't understand. You know, Common Core, all he had to do was bring up Common Core, and it would have been over. But he failed to do that. And it seems that it's, I mean, it almost seems intentional how we shoot ourselves. And if we want to win, we got to get out there and spread the truth, not get distracted with, you know, side issues. I mean, yeah, gay marriage, you know, gay rights and abortion are two important topics, but they aren't going to be the ones that are going to get us elected. You know, we can shoot ourselves in the foot if we keep on going after those and all, you know, all the Republican Party has, I mean, the Democratic Party has to do is capitalize that, and sure enough, we'll lose another one. You know, let's stay to our core, you know, what we are actually are as a party, what we're trying to create. Tell them that, you know, we're the party that sticks closest to the Constitution. I mean, what's the most important thing the Republican Party stands up for? We stand up for God, which most of the country does. And we stand up for the Constitution. That is really the key to, you know, this country. That's what we believe, and that's what we're fighting for as patriots. We want our Constitution protected. We want our government to be run under the laws and regulations of the Constitution. And stick to what our founding fathers envisioned. We don't want to give free rides out. You know, we're a real simple party. And if we start spreading the truth instead of trying to fight a group of lying people, we'll win. And I just wish we would just stop trying to play their game, because we aren't very good at it. We aren't good liars. And, you know, well, how can you defend a lie? The only reason the Democrats can is because we allow it. We don't challenge it. And we also need to bring in good, solid conservatives. People that have the core beliefs that we do. And get rid of these rhinos and get rid of these, you know, these turncoats. These are the things that are destroying our nation. You know, we have our governor of our state here in Florida, you know, made it sound like he was going to be the perfect Republican. Turned out a lie. You know, and we need to make sure that these people stand and believe truly in our Constitution. And they're going to stay with our Constitution. And nobody is going to intimidate them out of it. We need people with moxie who, you know, are going to be willing to stand up to, you know, the threats that are going to come his way. And they need, they're going to sit there and go, you know, I don't care what you say. This is the truth. I'm standing by it. You don't like it. You can go stick it where the sun don't shine. You know? And we don't have, you know, the politicians. There's so few politicians out there today who are willing to do that. You know, all you have to do is, you know, you're going to lose an electoral voter. You're going to lose something. And then all of a sudden, their story changes and off they go. You know, that's what I feel the biggest problems are right now with the GOP. And we need to change that and pass it along.
Hey, Scott, you know, I wanted to follow up on that because, Dan, you just brought up a great point that has been a pet peeve of mine for 8 years, the housing bubble. I just went through almost losing my house. I learned more about the mortgage industry, and everything I've heard was absolutely wrong. I learned something that blew my mind. You're right. George Bush kept telling them, no, don't do it. You're going to screw it up. Here's what happened. This is what's so jacked up. When Nancy Pelosi got the gavel, she put Barney Frank in charge of Fannie and Freddie. And I found this out. If, and we're going to go a simple math here. You buy your house for $400,000. Now you're upside down. Your house is only worth $200,000. You can't refi it. You're about to lose it. Here's what's the problem. The bank doesn't care. It's in their best interest to foreclose on you. They've been guaranteed if they foreclose your house, they get 125% of original loan value. They get $500,000 to take your home from you, and they get the house. And they get to put it on their books as a $400,000 house. The bank is now sitting on $900,000 in assets that they can then use to loan other people. And if the house is only worth $200,000 and I've got assets of $400,000, do I want to sell the house? No. People want to blame Bush. All these houses aren't getting sold. Why do you think they're not getting sold? Because the Democrats climbed in bed with the banking industry. Not Mitt Romney, not Newt Gingrich, not George Bush, not Halliburton. The Democrats, the liberal left, climbed into bed with the banking industry and convinced them to give loans to people that couldn't afford it, and now they make more money taking it from you than working with you. The Keep Your Home California, the National, all that is garbage. We went through it. We had to suck it up and go through a lawyer and a regular mortgage company because none of those BS programs that Obama has works, nor the one that Governor Brown did, Save Your Home California. None of that is all garbage because the bank wants your house. You only have a $200,000 house. They have a $900,000 house. And then they don't want to sell it, so it's going to sit there vacant, and everyone's going to whine about how George Bush screwed it up. This has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, especially since we just saved our house, and it was a living hell. So with that, I pass it on to Scott. Sorry, had to rant on that one.
There you go, Rodney. No. Hey, it amazes me that over the last 7-8 years, we know exactly what the process was that created this economic situation we're in. We know Fannie and Freddie. We know Barney Frank. We know the whole thing. We've got the whole picture. But George Bush still gets the blame. And, it goes back to common sense to me. You know, if somebody can afford to have a house, great. That's an honor in our society. But if somebody's not ready to do that yet, you don't turn around and try and remove all the hurdles so that they can do that without jumping any hurdles in life. Because then you've got a bunch of people that have a piece of property, and they really, really don't have the financial means to take care of it. Well, that's basically what happened. The left wanted to remove all the hurdles from the poor people buying a house. And not only that, they gave them a giant leeway on mortgages that in under most circumstances, a bank wouldn't take that risk. They removed the hurdles. And it does, Rodney. It's got us in this mess. And then what did they do once they made the mess? Then they made a bunch of solutions. You know, they're doing the exact same thing right under our nose, and nobody's even talking about it. In these issues that with the AP and the government spying on our reporters, they've got the chaos now from all that. And what are they doing? Oh, they're up at the Senate getting ready to write some legislation. Oh, let's fix this. And now we get to define. Before we couldn't define who was a journalist, but now that we're writing legislation, we can define who a journalist is. And they're working on taking down that First Amendment. They're working on it. And they're doing it. They're using the exact same tactic as they did with the housing market and the housing bubble. And they created the problem in the first place, and then they want to institute a bunch of solutions like Common Core that don't solve the problem that's stated. They give us a problem that's stated. There's a stated situation they want to solve, but their solution doesn't even focus on that. Their solution focuses on somewhere else, and that's the tactic they continue to use. We can take that all the way around. We can take that to gun control. They say we've got to have gun control. We've got to have all this gun control so that we can lower gun incidents where people are murdered. But we know that their solution doesn't solve the stated problem. And we know that the stated problem isn't even in what they state. You know, yesterday Dianne Feinstein got on this Navy shipyard shooting and other people. And the first thing you want to do is start talking about assault rifles. Well, the guy used handguns. You know, it's just a real simple one. If you take away all the guns away from the good people, you're not going to get them away from the criminals because the criminals don't obey the law.
Well, I'm former Navy, and that shipyard was full of people who were unarmed because the first thing Clinton did is disarm our military on bases here in America, except at the front gate. And, you know, you bring up a good point, but take it one step further. The left has got people so convinced that we're wrong, they're right, that they don't even hide it. They said Prop 30 in California is going to raise your taxes to save education. They immediately said, well, actually, it's going to be used to backfill pensions. Nothing's going to the classroom. None of the left that voted for it said, wait a minute, you lied to us. High-speed rail. They didn't say, oops, you lied to us. They went, okay, good. You know, gun control. They don't say anything. The transgender bathroom bill, it's like, they've got them so convinced that we're wrong, they're right, that even when they admit the truth, you know, with all of this stuff here, it's like, here's the facts. Well, no, I got it here. CNN blatantly admits, you know, they said the stock market is doing great right now because the banks are counting on the left winning control of Congress, in which case they'll dump more money into the too big to fail. They're admitting it. That's their game plan. And people aren't waking up.
So true, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Democrats are making money hand over foot over this. And, you know, and they're getting to the point, their arrogance is that they're starting to admit it. They're opening up saying, hey, yeah. And nobody's doing a damn thing about it. So wake up, people.
I want us to take a step further, and I want us to go back to abortion for a minute because this is a huge one for me. I was adopted. My sister was adopted. I was born before Roe v. Wade, so at that point I could not have been legally aborted. But it's a serious issue to me. But I want to tell you about a conversation that I watched occur in a group. I work in a lot of different Facebook groups. And this is the conversation, and I've changed the names to protect the innocent. But basically, the conversation went like this. I don't like abortion, but if it was from a rape, it's okay. And that's Fred says that. Jane says, we are conservatives in here. Dick says, you're not a true conservative. Sally says, we have to stand exact on the issues or we might as well give up. Jane said, if it's what Reagan said, then that's where we stand. Fred said, well, I'll just leave. Sally, Dick, and Jane say bye. Sally says, okay, we're all in agreement. Issue over. Let's go back to what you were doing. Problem solved. And, you know, the problem wasn't solved, and the issue wasn't over. And it's the best. It's one of the. It's the best example for the abortion issue. It's the rape discussion. You have to clean the sink before you wipe it down. It would be insane if you had a sink full of dishes, and you went into the kitchen to clean the kitchen. You started with wiping around the sink and getting that all cleaned up. Because you're just going to make a mess again when you turn around and wash those dishes. But we as Republicans, we want to keep wiping down the sink before we wash the dishes when it comes to the abortion issue. We want to. The left has taken baby steps for decades. We're not happy unless we pull every crumb and every cookie out of the cookie jar all at once. Rape and abortion is a fraction of 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 the abortions that are committed in this country. A fraction. Yet we left the news media, we left the left. Every time we go to discuss the abortion issue, they take us right off onto rape, and we fall for it. We sit and discuss it. We shouldn't even discuss it. We should say, you know, that is such a small. Let's focus on the abortion issue itself. So we get a candidate, and he makes the statement, well, on the rape issue, it's kind of cloudy. Oh, he doesn't stand 100% with us on abortion, so we're going to give up on him. And America, shame on this, because every year, many, many, many children are aborted. And we could be winning this. We could be winning this fight because 60% of the country feels in one way or the other that abortion is really immoral. We've got the people on our side. The left knows it. And they keep drawing us into that discussion. The moment we, and especially our candidates, start standing up and saying, I'm not even discussing that. That is not even up for discussion. That's a fight. Let's talk about personal responsibility first, and let's talk about all the abortions that are used as a casual form of birth control. Let's work on that right now, and then when we're all done with that, then we'll deal with this small, tiny little fraction, whichever way it goes. Now, if I had one of my nieces come to me and say I was, oh, horrid, just thought that I was raped, what do I do, Uncle? Boy, you know? That's a personal relationship between me and her, and I would encourage her in every way possible that baby is never a mistake. And this is one of those hurdles in life, one of those atrocious hurdles in life that we have. Some people sometimes have to jump over. But you're strong. You can jump over it. It's not the baby's fault. And that baby can grow into a wonderful life. But, boy, if I've got a great candidate that I like and he's a little bit squishy on my view of rape and abortion, I'm not going to run and turn around and smack him down and say he's not a conservative and throw him out because I'm not a one-issue Republican. I'm not a one-issue Frederick Douglass Republican. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. I'm a Republican who stands on the basic foundations and the basic platform and the basic principles that I believe in created the greatness of this country. Rodney, I'll pass it back to you and then let you pass it to Dan.
Well, you know, you made a great point. You know, the one-issue thing, I always tell people, you know, I was at the state capitol when the Tea Party first started here, and there was about 12 people standing on the wall along the street. Now there's 140 different Tea Party groups. And fortunately, I got to say, Scott, this is, if you haven't seen the breaking news, at the California State Convention, which starts on my birthday, October 4th, in Los Angeles, two things are happening. When Jim Brulte took over, we were $1.4 million in the hole. He has gone around talking about getting back to local elections. I love his statement because you've heard me say how you win the game from the ground up. We were in Discovery Bay when he said, I had someone build me a house once. They did not start from the roof down to the foundation. They started from the foundation up to the roof. he gets it and he understands it. He's got people believing in it. So far, he's raised $1.2 million, and he believes we will be out of debt by the time the convention starts on my birthday, October 4th. Number two is being together and understanding with a single issue thing. For the first time, Mark Meckler and Jeannie Rapini and Debbie, I forget her name. We have a Tea Party caucus at the Republican State Convention because they're no longer claiming the Tea Party are the enemy. They believe in them, and they want them to be back in the Republican Party and help us. So we're getting back to understanding the Tea Party is the Republican Party. And that one single issue, it may have got you off the couch, but you got to see the bigger picture. And people are kind of starting to get it because we're out there talking about it every day. Every meeting I go to, every meeting Brulte goes to, everything we do on this show, get back to local. But one issue, you know, Rico Aller put it perfectly. Just because I disagree with you today doesn't mean I hate you tomorrow. That's pretty simple. Don't you think?
I agree. And, you know, if we would just follow our basic principles on every one of these issues, we would be so far ahead, so far ahead. You know, I'm a firm believer that the federal government cannot micromanage. And we need to make sure that the states are just in control of a lot of things. Abortion is one of those things. I believe, and we don't ever talk about this, I believe that should be a state-level fight. And then if the people of California and the people of New York want to be nuts and fight back and forth over that, then let them do it. But if you want to live in Montana and Montana doesn't want to endorse that horrific practice, then Montana doesn't have to, and Montana doesn't have to be involved in the debate in it. They can debate it if they want it at the local level. They're going to have a hard time finding anybody support for the other side for the most part. But they don't have to be involved in it. And, you know, it's the same thing with gun control. Why are we having the gun control discussion at the highest level? The 10th Amendment says that the federal government, any other rules, anything that's not automatically handed to the federal government to be in control of, they're supposed to leave alone. Why is Montana, I use them again, but why are they having to have a discussion on assault rifles and gun control? Let California and New York, I'm a firm believer in walking with your wallet. You know, New York's got some of the highest taxes in the country, and people are walking. They're going to other states, and eventually New York's going to realize, oh, that didn't work so well. We got less revenue now than we did before we made the taxes so high. And if we as conservatives would stand together and go back to our basic principles like Ronald Reagan did, attack the basic concepts of why we believe what we believe, the biggest one is we all know, a conservative knows the bigger the organization, the more waste, fraud, and abuse. That's why our founders worked so hard on making sure that there was a difference between the federal government and the state government. Why there was a definite wall of separation between the presidential office and Congress and the Supreme Court. And why we have our government split up. Why we have local school districts. Why we have local counties that control a lot of their own decision-making. We can take it back to the state. It's not super really smart for a state to try and manage all the counties. They can't do it. They can't accomplish the task. If they could accomplish the task, boy, I might be a little bit more for that idea. But it's never been able to be accomplished. And, you know, Dan, you're down there in Florida. You're down there in one of my favorite states. And you guys are really politically kind of sitting on the fence right now. When I was living there in the early part of the last decade, it was a pretty conservative state. But you guys have really kind of moved the needle's moving the other direction. It's going the other direction. I really thought you guys had a pretty good governor coming in there, but he seems to be squishy. You know, Dan, how in the world are we going to get all these people? We've got 300 million people in the country. Probably 100 million of them are really actively involved in paying attention to what's going on. How do we get them to understand, quit fighting about all this stuff, quit arguing over stupid things, and let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to the foundation. Let's get back and look and see what our founding fathers did that worked.
Well, this is my whole argument, has been, you know, let's not argue the abortion issue. Let's not argue the gay rights issues. We know where the population stands right now. We know it's a losing battle. So why not, when they come in, why not orient our arguments towards what our founding fathers envisioned for us and the Constitution of the United States, and then bring back the moral issue, bring back, you know, how our First Amendment doesn't tell us we have to hide God. It says we have the right to worship as we feel that we, that, you know, that we believe in. Instead, the leftist holds we have to erase it all. We have to take it out of government. They never said that. We have to come back to our origins, bring God back into this, you know, the center of this country. You know, we got to get our children to start saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day. We got to get, bring back the moral fiber of this country. Once you bring that back, you know something? Abortion's going to take care of itself. Gay rights is going to take care of itself. We can do this very simply by just bringing back our morality. Bring back the family unit. You know, explain that, you know, why our nation was born. Remember, you know, before the we seceded from the British, we had been a British colony for 200 years. Before we finally got fed up with them adding tax after tax after tax on us. You know, they started out with shipping taxes, and they blocked all of our ports. And we had to sneak our commodities into this country through coastal freighters, where the British ships that drew too much couldn't go. And when the British realized that the blockades weren't working, they threw on the Stamp Act. And that was the birth of the Boston Tea Party. And the thing is, let's go back to teaching, you know, why we became a country. You know, start out with like taxes, you know, and, you know, instead of here letting Obama say, oh, we gave the companies a tax break. All we have to do is say, well, what about the other 16 taxes you have on them? You know, don't let them get away with their lies. They take one tax away, and they have 16 other taxes. Do you realize how many taxes a product has before it reaches the store shelf? You know, from the inventory of the material to build it, they tax the equipment to build it. They tax the people who run the equipment. They tax the inventory, once, you know, the product is built and it's put in inventory, they tax that. They tax our utilities. They tax the building at which that corporation's sitting on. They tax the trucks that come up to pick up that material, their products. They tax the fuel so that the truck can drive to the stores. They tax the roads that the truck drives on. I mean, why not tell the world the truth?
Well, Dan, that's the expansion of the Herman Cain solution, 999. Shall you own a small business? 9. Shall you be allowed to make your own money? 9.
You know, it's true.
But, you know, Scott, I wonder, there's a Facebook post that says that today 84,999,989 firearm owners killed no one yesterday. And then someone posted a great comment. How could there be a gunman in the Navy Yard since Washington, D.C. has such strict gun laws? And then the geniuses in California, the governor's about to sign a bill banning lead bullets for hunting of any kind. And this person points out in the article that it's a 4-to-1 animal birds killed by windmills versus lead bullets.
You know, Dan, glad you brought up the tax code, because I'm going to tell you, if I were running for office for any office, I'd talk about the tax code. I'd talk about that 80,000-page tax code everywhere I went. It is one of the best illustrations, God, of what's wrong with government. It's real clear and plain. It's made, it's created, it's designed to be non-transparent. It's designed that way. And it could be done very, very simply. But legislators, they go in to write legislation, and the legislation ends up being thousands of pages long and non-transparent. I'll tell you another thing I really liked about Herman Cain, and we don't talk about it a lot. I don't hear anybody really ever talking about it. I hear 999 even talked about it. But was Herman Cain saying, I won't let any bills pass 3 pages long across my desk. You know, and he was being a little bit facetious there. You know, we know we got sometimes you got to have a little bit longer than 3 pages. But I would be the exact same way. And I'll tell you, we've got so many of the facts on our side, and I don't understand why we don't use them. And it looks like we've got a special call-in, another call-in from down in Alabama. And let me tell you, I try my hardest to not ever forget to mention the fight in Alabama and what's going on down there. Number one, they rock. They're active, and they're going, and they're moving, and they're shaking. And things are being done. They're writing the book on Common Core. They've been fighting that. They've been fighting abortion. They've been fighting all kinds of things down there, and they're especially in the 7th District where Jennifer's at. And she's having a hard time getting on the phone this evening. I apologize for that. She's having some technical difficulties down there in Alabama. But we've got I think we've got Matt Jenkins on the line, who's down there in the midst of this. A worker bee down there in the midst of Alabama, working on a lot of good things. And Alabama's winning. I keep watching Alabama keep winning little battles here and there, taking little steps forward. And I'm going to say it today. I'm going to say it next week. I'm going to say it the week after that. Alabama rocks. Matt, is that there, you there with us?
Yes, Scott. Thank you very much. Glad to be on the show tonight. Good evening, everyone. I've been praying about it. I've been talking about everything, and I just want to go and tell everybody on the radio tonight that tomorrow I will be announcing officially via social media that I will be a candidate for United States Congress here in the 7th District for the 2014 cycle. Going to start that tomorrow. Already got 3 things I'm going to this week. I'm really excited about that. Talking about conservative values and stuff. Talking about what our party stands for, and let people know the Democrats aren't getting them jobs and stuff. Y'all were talking earlier about abortion, about social issues and stuff, and I'm not going to talk about those in my campaign whatsoever, and I'll tell you why. They really don't have any business in Washington. Those need to be decided out of Montgomery, and they need to be decided by the voters of Alabama. what we need to concentrate on in Washington right now is getting the stalled economy back on track, and we need to concentrate on getting the American people back to work. I'm not talking about these job reports that come out with part-time jobs, jobs that do this and this. Those aren't real jobs. I'm talking about real jobs people can be proud of and stuff, and that's where we got to get Washington back to. Instead of sitting there arguing over this, this, and this, let's concentrate on the economy. Let's get America back to work. And that's what's lacking in Washington right now. And that's what I especially see here in the 7th District. We got people on welfare. We got poor people and stuff. People don't have real jobs, and they really have no hope. And I want to try to give them some hope and stuff. But the way we got to do that is we got to let them know, hey, you know, you can keep voting Democrat, and you're going to keep being in that rut, or you can vote Republican and get some people up here that really care and really give you something to be proud of here and some real jobs and stuff and get you out of that rut you are in right now.
Well, that is exciting news, Matt, and I'm glad that you called us here and let us know first right here on the show. Let me tell you, you got our support. I know you. We've haunted together on a few things going down in Alabama 7, and congratulations. You're a good man, and that's the big endorsement. I know your character. I know where you stand, and you're going to have all the support you can get from us here. That is for sure. You know, Matt, if you would take a few minutes and kind of describe to us Alabama 7, the district. You did a little bit last week, but you know, you guys have got the black belt there, and it has to do with the dirt. Alabama 7 has got a potential to be a booming economic district. But the rules of the left have really snipped you guys back to where you're barely breathing, actually. And there's Alabama 7 is special. It's special because it's a great illustration to the rest of the country of where you end up when you follow their ways, especially in the economic area. So if you would, and then I'll pass you around to Rodney and Dan a little bit to go back and forth on conversation. But if you would, give us a little bit of history on the Alabama 7 and that particular problem.
Well, years ago in Birmingham, Alabama, my grandmother, she was born over in Mississippi, but her family came over to Birmingham, Alabama when she was real small. And our father came over to work in the steel mills, and the town was booming and stuff. And then the steel mills slowly started moving away, and one of the big things where that was happening is we decided to move steel industry overseas. They were even struggling in places like Pittsburgh with steel now. You know, we get a lot of our steel from overseas now, vice chair in the United States. And that's one thing that hurt the economy. And down through the Black Belt and stuff, you have a lot of rich dirt and stuff. The guy that ran last year, Mr. Don Chamberlain, he's kept his campaign promise, even though he didn't win. He's working diligently right now to get a 67,000 square foot greenhouse built down in Moundville, which is right south of here, and it's going to produce organic food, and Wholesale Foods has already signed on with it and stuff. So, and that's great. That's what we need. We need people like that out there being entrepreneurs, jobs in there. And one thing I want to look at doing is improving the infrastructure. If you go downtown Birmingham right now, you know, we got crumbled buildings. It's not safe to walk around. And if we can get businesses in there, attract businesses, we can do programs like Rich Lowry's talking about with Put Growth First. And what that basically does is we increase the business, which increases the economic base, which increases the tax base, which causes the debt of the city to go down. Right now, people are going around calling Birmingham Little Detroit, and to me, as living here in Alabama, that's quite embarrassing, and I don't want that happening to us. I don't want us to get to Detroit's point, but at this time, we are heading in that direction, and it's all because of Democratic leadership in the city, at the county level, and at the federal level, not the state level. Governor Milley's doing a very, very good job. He's getting businesses to come to Alabama. We just got Airbus down in Mobile. We got Mercedes-Benz plant here in Tuscaloosa, which is expanding. We're doing very well in some parts in the state. But through the city of Birmingham and down through the black belt because of poor infrastructure and stuff, and people kind of giving up on it. Nothing's going anywhere. The city of Birmingham's $4 billion in debt, you know, right behind Detroit. They've already declared bankruptcy. And like I said, you know, it's all because of Democratic incentives, you know, and I think we need to change course there.
Rodney, take it away.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm kind of jealous. I'm between K. Carl Smith, between you, Alabama's got it going on. We in California have a few issues, but Scott's right. I mean, you've got our support, hands down, not a problem. I mean, in my book, Montrose knows you. That's good enough for me, you know. but I wish you the best of luck, and anything you need, you know, everybody on this show knows. Yard signs, campaign paraphernalia, I'm the one that prints it in California, so whatever you need for your campaign, let me know, because we'll help you out, and I'm the one that prints it, so I can name the price. but, you know, getting out there and just doing it. You know, we keep talking about people getting off their butt and get involved in local elections. And, Jennifer, you keep bringing us these people like yourself that are stepping up to the plate. I mean, tell me, did you wake up one morning when you were 18 years old and go, I want to run for office someday?
Absolutely not. You know, I've been working on this for a couple years now. I've been through several campaigns in the area. I'm active in the Young Republicans and stuff. Matter of fact, today we got a debate with our Young Republicans. We got a debate on Thursday night, and as chairman, me and my state committee woman, we went out and talked about 20 businesses today about Public Service Commission, which controls the utilities in the state, and these small business owners were all about coming out to the debate. And I mean, it's just as simple as that, you know, getting the gumps and the gumption to go in and talk to these small businesses, because these small businesses are concerned about where this country is going, because it's affecting them, not just Obamacare, utilities, everything. And we have to do everything as elective officials and as a party to convince these small business owners that we have the message and we have the plan to make life better for them and get more money in their pocket at the end of the day.
Well, and you know what's funny about that is my best advice to you as a guy who's run campaigns before and keeps winning them here in my county and stuff, you can tell the people the truth without BSing them and yet give them an answer they don't want to hear. But if they believe you're telling them the truth, worst case scenario, they'll simply disagree with you. They won't distrust you. And the prime example was we ran a girl for city council, and she was outspent 20-1. And I just had her going door to door, talking to people, and told her, just answer the question point blank. Don't think about it. Just do it. And I had people point blank. The Police Officer Association endorsed her and actually said, we disagree with about 90% of what you are proposing, but we believe you. And I was like, whoa. You know, just be honest. Look at Australia. Everybody blew them off. The Conservative Party, which over there is the Labor Party, but the guy just told the truth. He didn't care whether you liked it or not. It was the truth. And it's what he believed. And boom, he wins. You know, I got a friend who lives in Australia, and they elected the person that was like their Obama who tried to shut down mining. What's Australia famous for? Not kangaroos. You know, but the guy got up and told the truth. And that's the way the Republicans need to get back to the game, is tell the truth. You know, so I wish you the absolute best of luck.
Dan, I agree. And Matt, I think it's a great idea to keep to the issues and, you know, avoid the abortion and gay rights and everything like that, and stick to what we need to do. Get the economy online. You know, right now, the last thing we need to do is talk about gay rights. I'm sorry, right now our country, our GDP is the lowest it ever has been in the history of this country, and that's including during the Great Depression. GDP, at least by year 6 during the Great Depression, broke 3%. I don't think we've broken 3%. And if you calculate unemployment figures the same way they did back in 1929, you'd find that our unemployment figures are pushing closer to 27%, where during the Great Depression it was 25%. We're in worse shape than we were back in the 30s. And what's happening is that our federal government is changing the way we calculate unemployment growth. You know, we just heard this crap saying from Obama saying, "Oh yeah, we just added 7 million new jobs." Did you talk about the two states you took out? Excuse me. You know, look at West Virginia. West Virginia is all but dead. They can't attract new industry because the unions brought these corporate taxes to the point where they were the highest in the country so that no company is willing to go there. West Virginia is doomed. You know, look at what they've done to Eastern Kentucky, you know, Eastern Ohio, because of Obama's brilliant plans. Do you realize Beach Aircraft had to lay off 45,000 people because there was an aircraft being built for the Air Force that was guaranteed to the to Beach, but Obama changed that and sent it to Brazil. So now, instead of putting our people to work, he's giving these people, you know, half a world away from us jobs. The pipeline, you know, where we could be much more self-sufficient. What does he do? He shuts it down. Everything positive he could do to our economy, he has not done. And everything that bad that he can do to our economy, he has done. When do you raise taxes during a depression? It's like putting fuel, gasoline, on a forest fire and expecting it to put it out. And this is what this president is doing and getting away with. And, earlier, Rodney, you were talking to Nancy Pelosi. Well, she's a number of years ago, you know, when we had a great Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, she got in bed with Bob Dole, and they were the ones that took him out. Out of the 100 charges brought against Gingrich, one came through. And now we have one of the best politicians in our nation's history, who is sitting on the sidelines. You see, anybody good, they go after, they attack. And what we need to do is start putting more good people out there, more people who are going to discuss the issues that need to be discussed. You know, abortion, gay rights are state issues. They aren't federal issues. And see what government does is they bring up the state issues and they throw it on the federal floor, and then this gives the U.S. Supreme Court the go-ahead to start messing in state issues. And the things that they forgot about this, about our country, is that if you read the Constitution, we have 50 sovereign states who have the ability to make their own decisions. But what happens? We keep on running to the federal government to solve our issues. The federal government is the last place we want to go. We got to get our state legislators to start solving our problems within our own state, to get our state Supreme Court to make the final decisions. And we have to make it more difficult to appeal it up to the U.S. Supreme Court. We need to take the members of our U.S. Supreme Court, and we need to throw them out. Every one of them, every single one of them has violated the oath they took to get in there. And that oath is to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. Every single one of them has broken that part of the oath. When you start adding laws to our constitutional amendments, you're breaking the Constitution. Let, you know, excuse me, go back to our basics. Go back, excuse me. Go back to the rules of the Constitution. And when people violate these rules, don't just look the other way. Call them up on it. You know, if I go 45 and a 35, the police pull me over and they give me a ticket. Why? Because I broke the law. Then why is Congress, why is the Senate, why is the U.S. Supreme Court allowed to break laws and nothing happens to them? Start calling them up on it and, you know, putting penalties. And we need to start doing that. And we need to also bring back the state sovereignty to let states, you know, make their own decisions without some fancy lawyer saying, oh, we're going to appeal it to the Supreme Court and then we should win. And that's the problem, is that, you know, we have these lawyers that know they can make a hell of a lot more money by filing it into the Supreme Court, getting it on their docket, which means 20 years later. And in the meantime, they're going to be charging their client and making out like bandits. You know, a lot of the problems that we have today, I'm sorry, I'm going to blame on attorneys who are greedy and want, you know that they can make a hell of a lot of money by playing these little fast little tricks.
Well, hey, Dan?
Yeah.
I got a question. On your point exactly, between lawyers, Supreme Court justices, for you, Matt, my mother-in-law, I did not know this, actually lives in Alabama. She's just outside your district, but her husband, Rich, used to work in Birmingham. And she specifically just came on Facebook and wants me to ask you about the occupational tax they put on the people Rich had to pay just to work there. The council's criminal. The judge declared the tax illegal, yet they still charge it, but not to doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. Anyone who has to buy a license except nurses buy them, and we're still charged. And she wants your opinion on this.
Well, my opinion is if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
Well, no, the
I don't,
the occupation
you know,
tax.
I, what I mean is, as far as I know, is if you're taxing one industry, it has to go straight across the board.
Well, I was hoping. I mean, Matt, can you expand upon it
Here's my stand on this. Okay, I think Americans today pay too many taxes. Okay, we get taxed for everything. We go to the store, we buy something, we get a sales tax. We go buy a car, we have to pay a tax. We have to pay taxes on our houses we own. We have to pay income taxes. I mean, you know, and the purpose of the government today, and the purpose of the government always, is to provide roads, to provide the basic needs to enjoy your prosperity and stuff. And we today, you know, even if you're in Jefferson County, you're in Washington, D.C., we are paying too many taxes, and they're just stupid taxes, you know. Anyway, the government can find a way to get some money out of you to pay for some special interest or whatever, they're going to do it. And it's wrong. It really is. And I wasn't actually aware of that situation. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to actually do some more research on that. But my stand on this is I think we're paying too much taxes right now. And I think there's a way to get taxes down even more. And one way we get taxes down is we cut some of these stupid programs we got out, and some of these stupid programs we have out there, and some of the stuff we're just spending money on. We have no business spending money on, you know. I mean, there's just I don't know if y'all have ever read the budget each year. I mean, the other year the secretary, the Department of State spent over 100, you know, so many billions of dollars, and a lot of this is going toward foreign aid. Why are we sending all this money overseas? Ask me that question. You know, we got problems here at home that need to be addressed. You know, like I was telling you about the infrastructure down in the Black Belt. There's a 4-lane highway that goes down there. It could easily be converted to an interstate or a freeway like they'll have out there in California. And, you know, they claim, well, we don't have the money, we don't have this. Well, you know what? All that money you're sending overseas, send some of that back to the state. Let's use that to get some Americans back to work. Let's improve some of the infrastructure here in our nation, not just here in Alabama. Let's improve some of the infrastructure here in our nation. You know, I know I lived out in California for a couple of years at Lemoore Naval Air Station. You get there in the Central Valley, and there's a poor infrastructure, especially over in the Fresno area. There's poor infrastructure, you know, and you know, we got all this money we're sending overseas. We're spending money on this. Why are we doing this? Let's take care of our country first before, you know. It's kind of like the same thing, you know. If my neighbor needs to borrow something, I'm going to let them borrow it. But I'm going to tell you this, at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure my home's taken care of first. And that's what we got to do.
Yeah, well, she was pointing out the fact that, I mean, and we're dealing with this in California too. Apparently, a judge declared it illegal. But you still have to get a license to work in Birmingham, and you still pay this fee, which is the same thing Scott and I are dealing with out here, where a fire tax was put on every home you own. Fire fee. Yeah, they called it a fee, not a tax, even though it's a tax. And we're paying $150 per building. But, you know, she wants to know, you know, that would be a huge thing for you to talk to the people about, that this is the prime example of what our government's doing, overstepping our constitutional boundaries. If you have to get some kind of permit in Birmingham to work, and you got to pay a fee to work there. I've never heard of that in my life. You know, I'm in California. They just want to raise the taxes and raise minimum wage. They don't even try stupid stuff like you have to pay to work here.
Like I said, I think a lot of that has to do right now. I'm not saying I agree with it. I think a lot of that has to do with Mayor Bell and the city council stuff over there. Like I said, they got this huge debt, you know, and they still want to do all these programs and stuff and beautify the city and do all this stuff. And like I said, if there's any way they can find a way, any loophole they can find a way, whether it's a tax, some type of license fee, they're going to do it. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, see, and I think personally as a campaign strategist, because I've talked on the show before, you can't win America or California or Alabama from the top down. You have to win it from the ground up. And I ran a state Senate race where every time the guy went out, he went out walking with a city council candidate or a school board candidate and talk local issues. And I've said this before, if you take the consultant concept of the Republican Party and I'm calling you saying go vote for the top of the ticket, you ignore the bottom of the ticket. But if I engage you at a local level that matters to you locally, like this issue in Birmingham, you instinctively want to go up the ticket 14 to 1 in the voting house. And so I think, you know, I would suggest to you, A, find out about this issue, but, you know, as you're campaigning, be out there, go find some city council members or some school board members and stuff like that and, you know, work with them because that's where you're going to engage and you're going to just kill the competition because any congressman that walks with school board candidates and stuff like that is a win-win-win-win.
You know, as a in the 80s, I had a picture of Ronald Reagan on my wall. And Reagan and my late grandmother were my inspirations for my interest in politics and current events and everything that's political today. And, you know, my grandmother always said this, and she said, you can do this. It'll work every time. She says, take it to your home. Take it to your home. For example, welfare. You know, it's great. I'm a firm believer in sharing with those that are hungry. I've done that. I'm a firm believer in helping take care of people that are less fortunate. She said, but if you put a sign on the front lawn that says free food, pretty soon you're not going to have enough food to feed anybody. You're not going to be able to help anybody, and you're not even going to be able to help yourself. And that's basically, you know, what you were referring to, Matt. And this applies to taxes, too. And I want us to look at something. We've got another snowball that we were blessed with, and the news media just kind of glossed it over. I think I saw it on The Blaze. I think I saw it on Breitbart somewhere. But we just don't even discuss it. In those latest budget sequestrations, there was a lot of programs and organizations and different functions in our government that had to cut back. And, you know, we went through it and we thought, you know, we were told it was going to be the major fiscal cliff. And we got on the other side of it. And what they found out was they didn't really have to do any layoffs and they really didn't have to really cut a whole lot of important stuff because they were forced to find the waste. And they cut out the waste and they were doing okay. I have said this for years. Don't give government more money until they learn how to properly use the money they got. They got enough money. They're pulling enough taxes from the American people to accomplish really anything we want to really accomplish. But, you know, Matt, you bring up sending it to foreign countries, and I'm a firm believer in helping when we can. But, you know, most of this money that goes over to foreign countries doesn't even end up where it's supposed to. If it all ended up actually really, really helping people, I wouldn't have such a hard time with it. But we send $1 billion here, $2 billion here, $5 billion here, and it ends up going into the wrong hands. Anytime you have that kind of money transferring back and forth between powers, you're going to have waste, fraud, and abuse. It's really me, Matt, and I'm so glad that you're taking and running with this direction in your campaign because, to me, it is one of the easiest things to sit down and explain to an American citizen that really doesn't keep up with politics and current events and economics and so on and so forth. Very easy to explain to them. You know, we got to get our spending under control. We're spending too much money in places that are stupid. You know, you said it. We're in places that are stupid. And we as a people, when we start cutting and pulling back the money from the power and saying live within your means, they always find a way to do it. They always seem to be able to get rid of the things that are not so important all of a sudden. And then, of course, we've got the other side wanting to make every program in the world that doesn't even solve the problem, the stated problem that it shows, like Common Core. But I appreciate that part definitely because, let me tell you, our businesses and our economics, if that all goes down, then a lot of the other issues don't matter. They just don't matter. Gay marriage doesn't have – we're not going to worry about that. If we've got an economy that makes the 1929 stock market crash look like a bump in the road. So I'll pass it back to you, Matt, with that, and then we'll pass it on around the room.
Well, that's you said some correct stuff there, Scott. You know, we got to, you know, there's nothing wrong with helping other people out. You're exactly right. But a lot of this stuff is waste, fraud, and abuse, and we have it here in our own. We have it here in our own government too. You know, when I was in the Navy, I saw waste, fraud, and abuse all the time. Does it get reported? Sometimes you can report it. Sometimes you can't. You know, and I mean, you're sitting there. You know, you're wasting man hours just on stupid stuff. You know, even in our military, you know, we're wasting time. You know, building ships. We do need to build ships, but it's just the process they use, and the money that's just transferred. It's just absolutely ridiculous and stuff. And that's something we got to hold our government accountable. We got to hold these government agencies accountable and stuff. And, you know, people get to Washington, they get so comfortable in that seat, you know, and what they don't realize is that seat can be taken from them any time by the American voters. And right now, and I wrote a blog on this the other day, we need to give an eviction notice to a lot of people in Washington, not just the Democratic Party, but there's some in the Republican Party, too, that need an eviction notice. Up there in Washington, because they're not doing their job. It's all they're up there is worried about their seat, and they come back during the election cycle, hey, here I am, get a picture taken, and go back to Washington. That's the only time you ever see them. And I alluded to this on last week's phone call. You know, you take somebody like Senator Jeff Sessions. He comes to every county in the state of Alabama every year as a senator. And that says something special, and you got to do that. Most politicians don't do it, whether they're a Democrat or Republican. You got to take care of your people, and you've always got to be mindful that that seat's not yours. It's the people you represent.
I agree with you 100% on that. You know, we don't... A lot of our politicians we never even hear from. Number two is, you know, they're more worried about getting reelected than they are about doing their damn jobs. And, you know, Matt, you were talking about how much frivolous spending was going on in the, you know, in the military. Have you ever read the book Boyd, B-L-Y-D?
No, I haven't.
You have to. Because here is a man who, remember when Schwarzkopf claimed his end-around move that beat Iraq? That was from John Boyd. You know the F-16? That is John Boyd. John Boyd took our government and he said, we are wasting so much money in the Pentagon. The Pentagon got so pissed off, they basically tried to get him thrown out. And as a colonel, he was forced into retirement. Well, he came back as a consultant. And he charged $1 a year. He was so poor, he had to live in a single-bedroom flat in one of the poorest towns outside of D.C. But the changes this man made were incredible. And everybody, every American needs to read the book because it shows you, if you want to know a true patriot, I mentioned this before, but, you know, please take my word for it, read it, because what you'll get out of it will help your campaign, number one, 1,000%. And it, his ideas, his tactical, he was showing how the military tactics can be used in the business world. And he was showing how we can produce high quality products in our military and do it at a quarter of the cost. You know, the guy was brilliant. And he never got the recognition he deserved because obviously he was doing what was right. And when you do what it's right, you'll never get any recognition. But he was one of probably our greatest patriots of all time. And again, his name was John Boyd, and you can order it on Amazon. And the book was written. Let me see, I'm grabbing it right here. I've read it twice because it was such a well-written book. And it was written by Roger Corman, Coram, C-O-R-A-M. And then it's, it says, Boyd, the fighter pilot who changed the art of war. And it's not only on war. He took up a new formula, power-to-weight ratio. He chased out Boyd, provocated into key centers of civilian and military decision-making, and led to a swift and decisive victory in Operation Desert Storm. He's not only in military, he's also civilian. And the ideas he has would change the world to the better. But not enough people have read the book, and the people, the powers that be, don't want you to. So they're hiding it. So I recommend the book very, very highly. He has so many great ideas on how to save money and get more done. After reading his book, I went through and started studying all the departments in our federal government. And I could identify, just little old me, I identified 120 departments that employed over 30,000 people that could go away without us even missing them. I mean, this is what we need to do. Is we need to take, you know, on a federal government level, we need to take that axe and start chopping away. You know, these frivolous departments that do absolutely nothing. For instance, let's just take the Fed. The Federal Reserve could be easily transferred over to the Department of Treasury. And we'd be saving probably $8 to $10 billion a year. You know, there are so many departments we can do without. We can get rid of the EPA very easily. That was one of Nixon's biggest mistakes. The EPA has only been around since 1969. But they have cost us more money and hurt corporate America more than any single group. we could take the Department of Education and get rid of them. There's no need for that. That should be decided on a state basis. You know, and all these departments we have here that we say we need, we don't. we could cut our national budget in half in a blink of an eye without even trying. We could bring it down by 75% without even trying, with a little effort. But we had, and then, you know, we had the Democrats who say, oh, look at these rich people. We're going to tax. They use taxes as a means of punishment. And they get away with it. You know, all these, oh, yeah, the bad, big, bad rich people. You know, and then the big, bad rich people that are taxing anybody making over $250,000. You know where $250,000 is? It's dead center of the subchapter S group of people. The plot, you know, the plumber who has two or three employees, the guy who has a small company, that, you know, the taxes they threw on made them lay off a person and prevented any future growth for that company. And this is what our government does. And then they look and say, look, oh, well, look at what trouble we're in. We need to raise taxes. No, you don't. You need to drop taxes. If we lowered, you know, if we got rid of half of the damn taxes that we put on corporate America, you know how fast our country would grow? Do you know how many companies are gnawing at the bit to expand, but they can't? Between taxes and regulations, they can't afford to. You know, my major, as I said, in college was economics. And, you know, when you see a problem, you look for solutions. And the easiest solution on earth is to reduce overhead. And reducing overhead doesn't necessarily mean laying people off and things like that. The government could sit down and help us out and reduce our overhead by 20%. You know what that would do for the average company? You know how many people would be added? How many new jobs would be added? And then when you add these new jobs, all of a sudden the people have, you know, and you start paying them more, all of a sudden they have what is called disposable income. That means, you know, they aren't living paycheck to paycheck anymore, and they can afford that new color TV or that new car or something or whatever. And what does that do? It produces more jobs. This isn't rocket science, people, but, you know, the other side has it so bamboozled that the people, oh, we got to tax, 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 tax. You know, and I try to explain, for every tax dollar you give to the federal government, that's $1 more you're taking out of the economy. And it's not going back in. So all the trillions of dollars we spend in taxes, it harms our economy. Taxing the rich is not helping us out. It's hurting us because it's taking more tax dollars out of the damn economy. And if people could just figure that out, you know, that alone would solve 90% of the problems in our economy. You know, get people to spend. When they can spend on products, you know, that are not necessary, that creates jobs. And when you get the more jobs you get, you actually, by reducing taxes, you actually, through the creation of more jobs, you actually increase federal revenues. And this is what this whole stupid thing, what people don't understand. And you try to explain that to a person, and oh no, he's rich, you gotta tax him more. And then I'm sitting there going, how the hell do you think the damn country was formed? I mean, does anybody have a clue how the state of Florida was formed? There were two guys, they were written into railroads. One guy was named Plant, the other guy was named Flagler. Well, Flagler was the first one that had the idea, and it was brought up by a little old lady in southern Florida. And she goes, I'm trying to grow my town. And, you know, just south of here, you have the Florida Keys. And wouldn't it be great to build train tracks to Florida, to the Keys? And he turned right out to Key West and fell in love with it. And he created the Overseas Railroad that you can still see if you go down the Keys. And the thing was, is Flagler was, he was rich. And he realized if he was going to make any real money on this, he had to have a city with people here. So he put in a power plant, and he talked to his friends who decided to put their companies down there, and he created a little city called Miami. And that was how Miami started. Miami soon grew to Fort Lauderdale, soon was added. They built the tourist's industry. And with Plant on the other side, Plant is responsible for founding Tampa. And also later on, Naples. This is what these big, horrible, rich people are doing. You know how many jobs they created? You know, and these idiots in Washington are saying, shoot the dog that feeds you. You know, the whole idea is, if I was in government, first thing I'd do is taxes. And the second thing I would do is I'd attack these 120 useless departments and get rid of them. Because if we did that, those two things, we could have the growth in this country would go up exponentially. Just by two simple things. But you know what's going to happen is you're going to piss off a bunch of politicians because that's where their money cow is. They get their money from the lobbyists and the unions that say, yeah, you need this, and I'll give you a kickback. Where do you think half of the damn $2 trillion that Obama begged for when he first got in office? What do you think happened with Solyndra? Look and dig into that one. you'll find out that Solyndra, through two different holding companies, the guy who owned the second holding company, was on Obama's campaign. How did President Obama, making $450,000 a year, how did he increase his net worth in 5 years to over $13 million? How did Nancy Pelosi go up over $30 million? You know, they don't ask these questions.
Well, Dan, she's a blue blood.
Pardon?
Nancy Pelosi was born with a silver spoon in her mouth. She's actually from the East Coast. So.
Most definitely. And, you know, we got her out here in California, and I've been trying my hardest to find another state that wanted to trade her for somebody. But nobody seems to want to trade her, so we're just stuck with her out here in California. And, you know, the problem with Nancy Pelosi is she's in a district where there's not a Republican around who's going to get rid of him. Now, I was really hoping when Cindy Sheehan ran that she was going to give her a run for the money, and they'd hand it to Cindy Sheehan. I think we would have had an easier chance of taking that. I don't think we would have though, but... we're getting towards the top of the hour, and we're most likely going to run over. We do every week. But if you're listening to us online right now, it's going to cut off. But if you call in on the number, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620, you'll be able to continue on with us. We're not going to go the full 3 hours this evening. I got a couple of things I got to get done this evening, but we are going to, it looks like we're going to go over. You know, Dan, I have grown over the last few months to really love you. We've got a show that we do on Saturday, Dan and I, on most Saturdays, Saturday Symposium. And the basis of it is been there, done that. And, you know, I know from my lifetime, I can see some certain examples where the wrong decision, where you see it fruition. A lot of times in politics, decisions that are made today, you really don't see the damage until a decade away. But, Dan, you have seen so many things, and we're fortunate to have the dad you did that you really got to see on a first-level basis some of the greater things that our country did over the last few decades. I was born in December of 68, so I was a little baby. While we were taking off and blasting off into space and all kinds of things, but I was a teenager when we did the space shuttle, and you watched this country make some dumb mistakes. Some of this stuff is not, like you said, rocket science. Some of the basic things, you know, we get accused, and I'd rather be accused of being a racist than be accused of not caring about people that are in need. I take that really personally, but I, as a conservative, and they paint me with the brush because I'm conservative and because I believe that programs should be very, very for the people that really need it, and you should really, really keep track of it, and I believe it's something that should be there. We need a safety net, but I'm lambasted with I don't want a safety net. I don't like a safety net. I'm selfish, and I don't care what the people think. And that's so far from the truth, and I would say it's far from the truth for most conservatives. You've got Democrats and Republicans that don't care about anything but except for themselves. That's nature. But I believe for the most part Republicans want to help. But the left wants to turn that safety net into a fishing net, and it rips. It doesn't work. Their concept is to take away the hurdles of people's lives and just give them money to take care of it. Let the government take care of them. We'll be all right. Let the government take the place of the father. Let the government take the place of personal responsibility and hard work. Take away the competition in life. We see it a lot in Common Core discussions and all kinds of around that. The concept of, oh, everybody should get a reward so that nobody feels bad. You know, all these things go together, and we know, and I know I know you well enough, Matt, to know that you care about people that are in need and that you don't want to hurt people that are in need. But I think you're with me. I would rather those people that are in need have some of that money that the people that aren't in need, that the government's just trying real hard to get more control and throw money here and there. I'd rather take some of that money and give those people that are in need a little bit better standard of living. And, it's passionate to me. We often talk about being called a racist. And that in halfway bothers me, is when somebody says that I'm not compassionate, because it's the first thing on my list. And so I as we go into the next hour, Matt, I don't know how long we've got you tonight. And Rodney, we don't have Jennifer tonight. She's having some problems. But, Dan, you know, as we go forward into this, you know, I'm excited, Matt. I have supported the last couple of candidates for this seat. Matt, you talked about Don Chamberlain, and I want to tell you, of all the people over the last 3 years that I've helped in what little way I could, that I've gotten to know, I love Don Chamberlain. The man is a good man. I walked in to help a candidate, and I walked away with a grandfatherly figure whom I respect highly. The Alabama 7 district, it can win. And I'm a firm believer it can win. And I know, I'll tell you why I know it can win, is because if you ask every politician in Alabama if a Republican can win the 7th district, most of them are going to tell you it's unwinnable. And that tells me it's winnable. It's winnable. And I'm a firm believer that you're going to get the message out and you're going to work hard. You've got a resume of working hard. And I am so glad and so honored that you called here to let us know this first. As we go on into this next hour, you know, I'm going to let you just take and run with it, Matt, and then let Dan and Rodney take off with it. What are some of the other issues in Alabama, especially concerning Alabama 7? We know agriculture and we know some of the basic issues, but what are some of the other stuff? What's some of the other stuff that needs to be fixed that we know that common sense will fix it? Matt, I've still got you on the board, but we've dropped Rodney.
Yeah, he was getting quiet.
Oh, okay, Dan, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Well, run with it, Dan. Rodney just dropped, and I'm not sure that Matt's hearing us, so go with it.
Okay. You know, as I was saying about taxation,
Dan, can you hear me?
Taxation is, you know, it's one of the most stupidest things out there that, you know, the other side is sold just so they can put more money in their pockets. You know, the whole idea, if you know economics, is to minimize taxation. Because you minimize taxation, you put more money into the economy. That means you create more disposable income. As more disposable income goes is out there, it means it's moving through the economy. And what is the definition of a healthy economy when money is exchanging hands? It's real simple. It's not rocket science. And, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Jennifer.
Thanks to Rodney from California. He's a great American patriot who happens to know how to get into Google Plus. I love it.
Good to have you. We're not quite sure. Matt is still on the board, but he was not responding. So it's good to have you finally here. It has been technical playing with behind the scenes, and Jennifer has not given up. And you know what? That's one of the reasons I love you, Jennifer. You don't give up. You keep on keeping on out with the song. So I want to.
Yeah, Scott, I can't hear you.
Oh, you can. Can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes, okay, via
my computer, via my cell phone.
Today you're coming in great today. But Matt kept that was getting quieter and quieter on my headset. So I don't know. Another undocumented feature of Blog Talk.
Yeah, it's crazy sometimes. Jennifer, run with it for a while. I'm not quite sure what you've heard, if any, but we've had great discussion. We got Matt Jenks going to be running for the Alabama 7 Congressional District, and that's awesome news. Jennifer, take it away.
Well, I just want to tell you that I just came from the Dallas-Fort Worth this past weekend, National Federation Republican Assembly. I was on the resolution committee, and we voted no on the CONCON, so there's not going to be any changes to that. We are going to fight hard to prevent that from happening in Washington. There should be no constitutional convention. I think it's great the way it is. It does not need to be tweaked. We also voted to end Common Core. That was another thing. There is an issue as well in California was Hawaii was represented, and we had some pretty serious stuff going on there. I'm looking for the resolutions here so I can share a few things with you, but we even were seriously getting rid of Common Core. There was just some serious stuff that was going on, and we met a lot of another thing that was really interesting. K. Carl Smith spoke to the committee, and then he spoke to the main body, and there are those within the Republican Assembly that were so blown away, they believe that the messaging that he carries is going to help save us in 2014 and 2016. There is just some serious stuff going on, and there were a couple of states, including Tennessee, that have been trained in the Frederick Douglass Republican methodology. They've been through the two-hour training session, and they would like to refer to themselves as the Tennessee Republican Assembly, home of the Frederick Douglass Republican. The National Federation of Republican Assemblies is looking at adopting that across the board as each state is completed their training. So it's really, really, really excited about the things that are going on in the state. We in the state of Alabama have, they elected Rod Martin, was the previous president of the National Federation Republican Assembly. For those who may not know about this organization, it's the oldest grassroots organization in the nation. We are the conscience of the Republican Party. We can do a lot in the primary that a lot of GOP groups cannot do. And Sharon Engel, who ran against Harry Reid, she gave a wonderful film presentation disclosing the voter fraud and how Harry Reid beat her with voter fraud. And she is now the newly elected national president of the Republican Assembly. Rod Martin stepped down. but we have some serious people across the United States that are dedicated and would like to make a difference. And so we have Sharon Engel coming to Alabama, to Birmingham, on the 25th of January. More will be revealed on that. We're still looking for a location. But I'm excited about the potential for District 7 in Alabama. I'm excited. I know that there are some people themselves in the Democratic Party to take over the Senate in 2014. And I think it's imperative that we get off the couches and out of off of our television sets and get out in the streets and start engaging people. You know, that's one of the things that I will say about Matt, is he is not afraid to go toe-to-toe with the establishment and with the Democratic Party. He has said repetitively that, you know, he is prepared to go into the churches and to go meet and greet anyone in the Black Belt and in Birmingham. And I'm excited to see all that's going to be taking place there. And going forward, I know that we've got some things in store, and I'm just really, really excited. There is just many, many things that are happening across the state that I think it's imperative that we do the necessary things to repeal. I know one of the things that we're talking about doing in Alabama is we want to hold the party's feet to the fire when it comes to pro-life. There's been, you know, people that say, well, don't let you put one pro-life bill on the docket a year. Well, we're saying, you know, stop the filibustering and let's get down to business. You know, we need to get this stuff resolved. You know, there was a resolution that was written in reference to the heartbeat legislation, and there's just some things that we are going to need to get busy with, and there's just no time to waste. We don't have time to waste. There is a lady down in special election in District 1 of Alabama. The Republican Assembly put out a questionnaire to all candidates running for Congress in District 1 down in Baldwin County. And then Jessica James won the Assembly vote and got our endorsement. That was real exciting. We have another gentleman down there, Dean Young, who's running, that's gaining some big traction. He's a Tea Party conservative, very much, you know, supports, you know, the sanctity of marriage and pro-life and such. So we'll see how that goes, keep everybody updated on that. I am just really looking forward to what's to come, and I will pass it over to Robbie.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, and glad to have you on finally. And I'm glad you're in front of the National Republican Assembly because it's very,
very important.
I just, you know, your report, I mean, the Assembly is the conscience of the Republican Party started back, what, 1947? And they're the leaders in electing Republicans out here in California. We have some issues with them because we need to elect some Republicans before we get picky about Republicans. But unfortunately, you know, you got guys like K. Carl Smith out there doing the job, talking about getting out there, and no excuses. Just get it done. You know, and that's why I like having Matt on tonight. And you know, Matt, I know it's getting late. So do you want to cover anything? Your website, your Facebook page? How do people get a hold of you?
You know what? It looks like Matt has dropped. I love Blog Talk Radio. You know, it's kind of fun. You know, Rodney, you can't hear it. But what we're hearing on the other end is a little echo, and it doesn't make you – we can hear you fine. But it sounds like you're speaking from a stadium. So Ron's on the road tonight, speaking of stadium, and then the calls drop. And, you know, we have these technical glitches with Blog Talk, but I think that kind of provides some of the character to it. You know, I'm not one to worry about hurdles. We jump over our hurdles here at Contending for Truth Radio. You know, Jennifer is...
You sound great now.
You sound fine now.
Because I'm on a conference call with my own laptop. If I'm next to my laptop, you're hearing an echo. So I had to walk away from my laptop.
Okay. So. Well, you know what? It sounded great. It actually sounded great. You know, sometimes the flaws of Blog Talk, you can't understand somebody. You were totally intelligible. It just you had sound of it sounded like you had a sound effect to make you sound like you were in a stadium.
So we just go like, hello, 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 America, 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 get off your butt.
That's right. You know, great discussion tonight as always. You know, Jennifer, I'm excited about this. You know better than anybody in the whole wide world that what's going on in Alabama 7, I'm going to be right there helping as much as I can. I've been pretty busy the last couple of months, and I haven't had a whole lot of personal time to just been helping anybody. Barely shows done. But between now and 2014, you know as good as I do that we're going to do everything we can to win Alabama 7. You said straight out at the very beginning that it can be done if you get to the people, that when it is done, it'll be an excellent example to the rest of the country of how to take our country back, because it can be done. And that Alabama 7, it needs to be a national election or a nationwide watched election. It needs to be on the national stage, Alabama 7. It's the poorest district in the country. And it's got a lot of good people, a lot of very, very good people. And they're being burdened right now. They're under the bondage of what happens when you've got government taking up too much space. Trying to control too much, trying to control from the top, all these little things at the bottom, and that kind of a mentality and a remove the hurdle mentality. And let me tell you, Jennifer, Alabama just keeps rocking. It just keeps rocking, and it just keeps rocking. And you gave us some great tonight, a plethora of things going on. You know, I'll tell you, the National Federation of Republicans, as far as I'm concerned, is working harder than any group I know. They seem to be really, they really seem to have it gotten together. And Tay Carl, things are moving. He's not the answer because you got to go back to basics. You know, Rodney, we've got Rodney. I believe we've got Dan and Jennifer. Everybody else is gone. But I want to pass it around for final remarks. And we did. I want to thank you guys. We had a great show tonight, an absolutely great show. Wonderful, wonderful news, breaking news right here on our show about the candidacy of Matt Jenkins for the Alabama 7th Congressional District. Excited about it. Rodney, I'm going to pass it to you, and then we'll pass it to Dan, and then pass it to Jennifer, and we'll closing remarks.
Well, I think with closing remarks, we just got to go back. I mean, this was an incredible show tonight, you know. I mean, I had my little rant about, you know, the stuff, but people just need to wake up. I mean, you got to be kidding me. If you believe the economy's good, if you believe jobs are coming back, if you believe that those taxes are going to help education while you're paying $5 a gallon for gas, when I was in New York, $12 for a pack of cigarettes, this is not the way we help the economy. Regulating small business out of existence, not build the companies. I talked about it before. You know, I wonder, well, Bill Gates is supporting Common Core, and it realizes with an ignorant education system,
you wouldn't have Microsoft because nobody would innovate it. We wouldn't be holding iPhone 5 and Droid and HTCs and iPads and tablets. This stuff wouldn't exist. You know, I mean, people, you got to wake up. I mean, figure it out. Do some reading, you know. The health care bill, Obamacare, the regulations, the governor, 482 bills in California, Scott. We need a part-time legislature. Give me a freaking break. You know, these people have way too much time on their hands to the lead bullet, transgender bill, illegal immigrants. Illegal immigrants can get driver's licenses in California as of this Thursday. And here's the jacked up part. Federally, you can't hire an illegal immigrant, but you can't refuse to hire him if you know he's illegal because guess what? The driver's license tells you he's not a legal resident. And if he shows you his license as part of getting a job, you can't deny him employment because you just found out he's illegal based on his driver's license. Excuse me? Somebody explain that to me. Okay? That makes no sense. And then you've got Dianne Feinstein, every time anybody unloads a weapon, she wants to talk to assault weapons. They weren't used in Fort Hood. They weren't used at the Navy Yard. They weren't used at the school shooting in Colorado. They're not assault weapons. Just because they fire more than one bullet does not make them an assault weapon. It's like, come on, people. Lead bullets. Windmills kill more birds than lead bullets. Give me a break, you know. In the meantime, we, the Republican Party, need to stop fighting each other over single issue. It's not about one issue. It's about the Constitution. Today's the anniversary. Everyone needs to wake up. Ron Gibbons put it on today. Everybody should read the Constitution today. And while you're at it, read the Declaration of Independence. Why did we become a country? Read it and read it carefully and read it all the way through. It's a hell of a lot shorter than Obamacare. And we need to change this country fundamentally and get back to where we started. No, it's not comfortable. No, it's not easy. No, it's not going to happen overnight. But damn it, it needs to happen. And with that, I pass it to Dan.
Thanks, Brandon. And I agree, we need to go back to our foundations. Read, you know, what our forefathers saw. Read the Federalist Papers. And I can't push it enough. Please, people, take the time to read the book, Boyd, B-O-Y-D. It's more than worth it. We also need to start looking at ways of cutting deaths. You can cut taxes without cutting programs. And we need to get somebody in government who's not worried about lining their pockets. I had good old Nancy and Barack here. We need to put 2-term limits, disallowing people to build little dynasties has to stop. And we need to, you know, start cutting all these damn, you know, wasteful departments that do absolutely nothing. You know, you know how many billions of dollars we spend on that? And we'd also cut the traffic congestion in D.C. at the same time. You know, let's get rid of all the baloney. Let's start calling these politicians upon this. You know, and if they try to deny it, you know, I would love to go up against any of them and go on the adept. Because I wouldn't let them off. I mean, and they're the swiftest group of cookies out there either. You know, they're trying to make themselves look like an intelligent people, point blank is and we need some good, intelligent, conservative people out there. Matt, you sound wonderful, and I was over there, I'd be right on your campaign group, you know, supporting you. And because we need more people like you out there. And we need to encourage more conservatives to get out there and get beyond your comfort zone. I mean, if you think I'm in my comfort zone, you got nothing coming. I don't like talking in front of people. I hate politics because of the very reasons why we're talking. You know, things we have to talk about. You know, these are a bunch of shysters. And, you know, I believe in... I was raised with two things. It's called honor and integrity. And without that, how can you, you know, go to the mirror every morning and look at yourself if you don't have either one of those? Every one of these damn politicians, man. And I have no use for that. And on a final note, I'd like to mention my mother-in-law, Dorothy Jarner, who at 8 o'clock on Saturday left this world. And may God look over after her. And I wish I could be there for the funeral, but my own health prohibits. And it's weird she passed away directly below where I was in the ICU in the coma last year. I'm going to miss her greatly. She was a woman, a one-of-a-kind woman. Made it 93 years, and if you think I have stories, she can tell you how it was to grow up in the heart of the Depression and the hardships they had to overcome. And her correct motto was, if you want something, work hard for it. You know something? That's the key to it, folks. You want something, work hard for it. Don't listen to the federal government that I'm going to give you. They're going to give you a pittance. You know, if you listen to this side, we'll give you the opportunity to make as much as you want. You see, if we take away all these taxes and we allow these companies to hire, they'd be bringing on so many people, there'd be a shortage of people to hire, which would in turn raise the salaries. And you'd all be making really good money. And you know something, at the end of the week, you'd feel a hell of a lot prouder and a hell of a lot better to know that you earned that money instead of having some jerk in Washington giving it to you. When I talk about pride, honor, and integrity, this will give you the pride. Making the money yourself. And with that, I'll pass it on to Jennifer.
Well, you know, we got issues. We got some serious issues. I mean, do they want to do this constitutional convention? We know that our constitution is at risk, and our forefathers put some things in place, you know, to protect us from the big government, from the big, you know, from a dictatorship. And what's going to happen? I don't watch it. Is they're going to wake up one day and wonder what in the heck happened? What's going on? Why is it that what happened? And they did this in World War II. They did this, you know, over in Germany. People woke up one day, and then I can remember watching the video archives when you know, all that finally ended, and they went into those concentration camps and saw exactly what was going on. It was totally different than what was in the media, you know, and people were screaming, they lied to us. And I could easily see that happening in America today. You know, where is the U.S., the United States support from our commander-in-chief? When is he going to, when are we going to start waking up that we have a commander-in-chief that does not put America first? You know, and slowly but surely, you know, as things are creeping along and the media does what it does best, you know, with their propaganda machine on the left, you know, to convince Americans that, we're not doing anything bad. You know, and then you got somebody like Becky Garrickson who comes out, you know, when they realize that we come to Tea Party, you know, something's not right with the IRS. And wake up and smell the coffee, people. You know, times are just not what they used to be. You know, we're not in the Leave It to Beaver world anymore. You know, it's time that we make get off our couches and do something. You know, and I know that there are 1% of us that are involved in politics that want to see something changed, and the rest of us are just trying to figure out, you know, when the new episode of SpongeBob is going to come out. You know, but I'm watching what's going on with my 11-year-old at school. They're just not bringing home the homework like they used to. I want to know what's going on with my child's education. I want to know that she's being taught the things that are not just going to have you succeed in a factory. I want the ability to be able to be creative. You know, this is the thing that America was founded upon. When a child says to me, I want to grow up and be an astronaut. Our schools today, under the current CSOP or Common Core standards, are not allowing for those kinds of things with our children. You know, and there are people that are out there that are trained to teach this stuff, this propaganda, the lies. They've been trained enough that they're believing it themselves. Teachers are being told that if you come out against it, you'll lose your job. You know, people are afraid. They got to keep food on the table, keep the lights on in the house, water. You know, we've got things going on right now in Birmingham where, you know, we got a congresswoman who, you know, she gets involved when she's looking for votes. And on the off season, she throws people a bone every now and then just to let them know that she's somewhere out there. But, you know, we're looking for somebody that wants to get in the trenches in District 7 and be there and be a part of the community, not go get in Washington and get in some highfalutin penthouse and periodically come down and show your face when it's time for a photo op. But we need somebody that's willing to get out there and be there for the people, for their constituents. And it's high time that District 7 had somebody that represented the people. You know, and so I'm glad to see that we have somebody out there willing to take that challenge. Willing to take that challenge. You know, we had a candidate that ran in 2012 and 2010, Don Chamberlain, you know, and he did not stop fighting the fight. He may have lost the race, but he didn't let that get him down. And he's getting ready to open up the first hoop house for his farm bill program that many may have heard him talk about back in 2012. I'm excited to see that we've got a person who ran for Congress, lost, and he's going out there now and providing jobs in the Black Belt region.
Amen.
You know, that's more than I can say for the, you know, congressman that left in District 1 and the one that we have in District 7. I'm ready for, it's time for change. It is time for change. I'll pass it back around, Scott.
Amen, Jen. And boy, you know, you got some good men and good women down in Alabama. And we can do it. I'm a firm believer. You know, Don Chamberlain, there's just not a person around that wouldn't get kicked in the gut if they said something bad about Don Chamberlain for me. You know, the man proves he was who he said he was during that campaign. And have him on the show and talk about it. We've had Bob Talk Radio, and he's just a good man. He's got a good foundation. One of the reasons I supported him. That was going to give him the ability to get there to get the job accomplished. It's a lead. And that's when I'm sorry, Matt Jenkins got that experience. And I'd like to encourage everybody who's listening. I wish we could have gotten this in at the beginning of the show. We really should have. But we want to get you to get to the website. That's JANKINS2014.com. MattJenkins2014.com and check where he stands. I tell you one thing I know about Matt Jenkins. He's a hard worker. A very good work ethic. And he stays busy. And he doesn't want to stop until he reaches the task. Sometimes that's more important than the fringe issues. Those single issues, Rodney, that we get to sometimes. But I'm really excited about that. And next week, something else from Alabama. In Alabama. We are excited about that. Another man in Alabama that I respect for. You know, I get to know and network with a lot of people across. And him and I stand in unison on those. And he understands the role of the family. He understands the work. He understands the work and how they are to saving our society. And I am excited to have him on the show with us this next week, to ask him questions about his campaign. You know, what exactly is I am running. And then he said public service commissioner. And Rodney, that was vice chair in California. I know I shouldn't say that because I didn't know what one of those was. I really couldn't have told you until we interviewed you, Rodney, what that job entails. We're going to learn about that next week. What is the public service commissioner? Local. Why is it important that we concentrate on the bargaining? These elections that we don't ever even think about. And I'm excited about that next week. We got confirmation on it tonight. I chatted with him a little bit about it last night. And we're going to do that next Tuesday night here on Parental Sovereignty Radio. We've got some other shows on. Of course, we've got
Don Miller, Free Don Miller, Free Don Miller on Thursday night. Now, although it's not on this network, it'll be on the Underground Hard Drive at Block Talk Radio. Don't want to miss this. I've been doing this for, boy, it's getting close to 3 years now that I've been talking every Thursday night about this horrendous case. And let me tell you, it's horrific enough. The situation, the story is horrific enough. For 3 years, every week, we talk about it on Blog Talk Radio and have no ambition to stop it. And don't ever have to repeat the same subject over and over and over again. Every show is different. Every show, you will learn something new in every show. The details behind this are so lopsided. It's just you there. It's a wrongful conviction. It was a maliciously wrongful conviction. The judge and the DA, there was lying, there's conspiracy. There's all kinds of things. It would take hours and hours and hours to explain. We've done it for 3 years for a couple hours a week. Please tune in on Thursday. And on Fridays, of course, a late night class. Last week, we talked about the story of Ruth. You can find that archive. You know, the story of Ruth is a beautiful, beautiful story, and it is fascinating. And we had a great time. We discovered some incredible biblical truths, and it just painted into that story. And it's a beautiful piece of art, as well as a book of the Bible, and as well as a part of the Old Testament. And we covered that. So that means this is what we call the United Kingdom. We just experienced the first half of the Old Testament. The story of Abraham. The second chapter of the Old Testament is the story of David and his family. Of course, being a descendant of Abraham, but we're going to focus on Abraham. The kingdom is going to be united for 120 years, and then it's going to divide. And each Friday morning, we just slowly but surely wander our way through that Old Testament history and that Old Testament story. So we want to encourage you to join in. That's 10:30 every Friday morning. We sit around Betty's table, and it's ladies' Bible class that I've been teaching for the last 5 years. We have a great time. Some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful friends of mine. So we want to encourage you to be there for that. And then, of course, we're not doing politics and religion at this point, but be watching forward. We got a couple of guests coming up here in the next month or so, and we're going to get back and do a few of those and talk to some important and some working people, worker bees. This is Contending for Truth Radio. I hope if you listen this long, all the way through, a lot of people don't make it all the way through to the third hour, but if you've been listening this long, we want to thank you. We want to ask you to go and help support the people we talked about tonight. We want to ask you to contact us. If you've got any questions, at C4TRadio@yahoo.com. That's C4TRadio@yahoo.com. And we're happy to answer any questions you've got. But each week, we do this. Yes, Rodney.
Hey, I want to close with happy anniversary to the U.S. Constitution. Let's make sure it doesn't get washed away or die.
Exactly. Exactly. Happy anniversary of that. That's what we stand on. That's our freedom. That's the document that guarantees our freedom. We've got to have a lot of respect for it. You know, it's the outside perimeter, protection. It's the wall. It's a very important document, and we want to really appreciate those founding fathers that. In the summer of what year did they write the Constitution?
1789.
Where? Pennsylvania.
Right.
Yeah.
Philadelphia,
very, very, very good. Constitutional convention. And what do you know about that?
They didn't have have any additions.
That's right, Millie. They didn't have any additions. And, Rodney, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, let's give it to those guys. 3 months in that hot room, no air conditioning, but they cared about the future of this country. And that's what we're about here at Blog Talk Radio. That's what we're here about at Contending for Truth Radio, especially this Parental Sovereignty Show. I hope you enjoyed it. We try and just be a discussion from each other's living rooms. I always am hoping to replicate what would happen is if we would just all sat down in the living room for a couple hours and had conversation. And we always wipe it out of the ballpark, Rodney. I'm always so proud of us. I got some great co-hosts. And all the conversations always appreciated. We touch on things that we don't hear on Rush Limbaugh. We don't hear them on Sean Hannity. We don't hear them on the news shows. We get down to the bare bones of the issues, and we really gnaw on them. And that doesn't happen in the public arena. So I firmly believe this forum is very special. So I want to thank everybody. Next week, same time, same place, we are going to go out with letting a gentleman of whom we all have a lot of respect have the final words. You know, Red Skelton, he's been around, he's been gone for a little while. But I'll tell you, the man, if this doesn't make you tear up, folks, I don't know what would. It makes me tear up each time I hear it.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. This is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Lasswell was his name. Mr. Lasswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion, to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer and that would be eliminated from schools too?